The following podcast is intended for listeners over the age of 18. It contains mature subjects and adult discussion. Listener discretion is advised. As we are not doctors or psychologists, all advice is for novelty purposes only. All advice and discussion comes from our own personal experiences. Yours may well be different.
Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There's always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore open relationships and swinging. The pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of swinging in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hand down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus a free extra gift so sensual I can't even mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type swing set for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code SWINGSET at adamandeve.com. Hello and welcome to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. Tonight we are going to gangbang the mailbag. We've been doing this for a while now, and we've gotten a number of questions from listeners. Most of them we answer in the advice column, but we thought we'd put together a special episode to deal with a few recent emails and some voicemails we've gotten in. If you'd like to leave a voicemail or send us an email, you can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. You can send us a voicemail at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And tonight we're going to be getting to some of those questions. I'm Cooper Beckett, and with me tonight is...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger.
Hey, it's Dylan.
This is Shira B. Katz.
And we're just going to jump right into it then.
All right, well, before we get started, on the heels of our fun orgasm episode, I heard a new term that I think it's important that I share. So one of the things that I'm not a big fan of the term squirting, but I know for some people it's like a sexy term. And I tend to use gushing when we talk about that G-spot orgasm when women ejaculate. But I heard this one, she-jaculation.
Excellent.
Any thoughts?
Shira had a reaction.
It's just so punny. It's so punny.
Like manscaping.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's all right, though. It's user-friendly.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think she-jaculation kind of feels like that, but calling it she-jaculate is actually kind of nice.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I had to put that out there. Had to share, you know. Another
it's totally cute.
Addition to the lexicon.
I'll tell you this much, Ginger. I'd rather someone say I was shejaculating than that I was squirting. Squirting.
Right.
I could barely say that word.
So you don't like squirting either, huh?
It's funny. It's just a weird noise. It's like a weird in your mouth type of word to describe what's going on.
Reminds her too much of Pokemon.
Oh, God.
I was going to say, it can be weird in your mouth, yes.
But it's not what I meant.
It's totally weird. Uh-huh.
It's not the most elegant word.
No, it's not.
Although gushing and she-jaculating are not elegant either.
You could say, I gushed my she-jaculate all over him.
Wait, did you just claim it with your name, Shira?
I did. She-ejaculation. I like it. Right?
Okay. We'll totally put that in the online dictionary.
She-ejaculation.
All right. Because that sounds cool too. I like that.
That's perfect.
Okay, we've staked a claim here on Life on the Swing Set. Excellent. So tonight we've got our voicemails. We're going to start with a voicemail. So let's cue that up and we'll give it a listen here.
Hey there, Life on the Swing Set, and a very special hello to Cooper. This is Melanie calling you from Toronto. My husband and I are taking our first very tentative steps into the world of swinging, and so far we're having a lot of fun. There's one thing, however, that we're hoping you can help us with. Before my husband and I got together, neither of us had very much experience with other people. Now that we're looking at expanding our horizons, we're having some confidence issues. From what we've heard on your podcast and from talking to other swingers, it sounds like all swingers are sexual superstars. We're getting a bit worried that our skills in the bedroom won't measure up when we finally take the plunge and swap with another couple. So our question is, are we going to be blacklisted in the swinger community if we're not as skilled as our friends' previous lovers? Can you give us some advice on conquering our confidence issues? Thanks so much for your fantastic podcast. We've learned a lot from you, and we hope you can help us with this question, too.
Okay, I'll field this one. A very special hello to you, too. Next question. Oh, wait, there was more. I got all warm and fuzzy that she gave me a special hello, and I just didn't even pay any attention.
Well, you know, I think that
I hope someone else was paying attention.
we you know, have kind of dual purpose here. We're at the same time we're telling people about swinging and what we do. We're also kind of sort of maybe trying to sell the concept to people that may not have already come over and decided to become non-monogamous or swingers or
you mean our evangelism?
Maybe just a little bit. I think maybe in the process of selling the whole concept, we may have put across the impression that everybody is a sexual superstar. And while we have tons of awesome stories that have lots of cool things that we've done and had done to us, I want to put it out there that not all moments with other couples are like that. And there can be a lot of awkwardness meeting people the first time and just a lot of uneasiness and, you know, maybe even confidence issues that can come up. It's not that it's bad at all. You know, I definitely don't want to undersell the whole concept. It's really just meeting other cool people that you end up either clicking with or not, just like in regular, you know, everyday life. And then if you click with them, lots more stuff can happen. And so I wouldn't be too worried about it. You're not going to end up being blacklisted if you're nervous. I think if anything, the fact that you guys may not have had a lot of experience with other couples and may come off as shy might actually be a turn on for, you know, some other couples. It's like, oh, the cute little newbies or something like that, you know? So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
You know, I don't know a whole ton about this personally, but I can say that I've listened to quite a few swinger podcasts, and one of the things that I noticed is that there's a lot of guys out there talking about, specifically guys, about how they're not always rock stars. Swap Foo podcast actually had a really great episode on it. I think that the questioner should go check out one of their a couple of their podcasts. They talk about, you know, difficulties with performance and erectile dysfunction, and I know that also I think Boris and Doris had a podcast about that too, right,
Coop? Yes, pretty much it happens to all of our podcasts, I mean to all of us in the lifestyle, where we have the discussion of what happens when we're not the sexual dynamo. And I think the key thing for them to remember is enthusiasm can make up for a lot. Willingness to learn can make up for a lot. So if you combine enthusiasm with a show me what gets you off, show me how to get you off, and make it about your partner, not about you, and really whatever your level, you could be your first time out, even first time having sex. And as long as you make it about your partner's enjoyment first, and you make that your primary concern, because that's what they're doing. They're making your enjoyment their primary concern. I think it'll be just fine.
Agreed. And I also, along those lines, the question specifically asking about conquering fears, I think you just let go of the fears and you just go out there ready to have a good time. And cultivating relationships with people at your own pace and taking it as slow as you want to, going out to, you know, on dates as many times as makes you comfortable so that when you are at a place where you're going to go play, you can have a little comic relief. You can, you know, stop the action and talk to your partner. You can not move through feeling like you can't take a break or laugh a bit or ask these questions, because that comfort level is key, I think, in conquering the fear. I mean, if you're comfortable before you even get intimate, then it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, also, I'll address this question specifically from the exact same point of view. When Marilyn and I got into the swinging lifestyle, we'd had next to no experience. And that was a big concern for both of us until we got into the swinging lifestyle and we realized how laid back most of these experiences are. And so you're going to have these concerns until you try it. But odds are, when you actually get in there, you're going to be just fine.
Another good tip is to just be super frank about how you're actually feeling. If you're a little nervous, don't be scared to let your potential partners know. Just even when you're dating in the regular community, there's nothing worse than, you know, dating or getting ready for a big date with a guy who talks a big game about how big he is and how great he is in bed and then doesn't deliver. Like, what? Like, you know, definitely try to keep it real. Let people know how you're really feeling. If you're a little bit nervous, or if, you know, let someone know, and that way they can be a little bit more nurturing when they get into bed with you.
Well said.
So we hope that helps. I have a question here from an email. Did you hear about that military guy who spread HIV knowingly at swing clubs? This has made me really seriously reconsider going to clubs. What is your advice for staying safe? And just because that started like an urban legend sounding question does not mean it is not true. And this, before we get going here, I'm going to give a little information about this. In Wichita, Kansas, an Air Force sergeant was just convicted of exposing multiple sex partners to HIV at swinger parties knowingly. In fact, he was specifically told he needed to notify all partners of his status, because the military apparently gets very much involved in that when once you're HIV positive. He went to clubs, had bareback condom-free sex with people at clubs, assuring them that he was safe, and spread HIV to, exposed multiple partners to HIV at these clubs.
Well, I think you just gave part of the answer. I mean, you just said, you know, bareback, straight up sex.
Yeah, the first part of this answer is don't be stupid.
Right.
And by don't be stupid, I mean actually have these conversations, really get to the point of trust. And, you know, I'm not a believer in barebacking at clubs. I think that's a really foolish idea that just in general endangers the entire community. We as swingers have a responsibility to be safe. We know that condom usage cuts down on the vast majority of possible transmission, especially on the big one, HIV.
That's right. And just to be clear, you mentioned exposed people to HIV. It wasn't actually spread.
That's just so disappointing.
Isn't it, though?
Do you think, I mean, just to play devil's advocate, do you think that maybe there was, like, some amount of, like, psychological distress on the guy? Like, was he newly diagnosed? Was he in denial?
Well, you know, I guess whether he was in some kind of psychological distress or not, is really something that anybody infected with any form of STI has to deal with. And so whether there was a failing with whatever health services he was with the military, or just had a tough time in his life, you know, anybody's going to have to go through that. So him being swinger, him being non-monogamous doesn't change that. But it also doesn't change his responsibility to everybody else. So maybe, and you know what, if somebody does catch something like that, they really do have to take care of themselves and take care of other people.
The only reason why I bring up the psychological thing is because, you know, I don't think anyone in their heart feels like a bad guy or feels like they do things intentionally, like I'm going to go and spread this disease because I'm angry about it or something. I could really see someone just feeling bad or maybe in denial or maybe just not like reconciling their feelings and that just reinforcing the fact like, hey, maybe this wasn't an awful guy and maybe he, you know, at the time felt in his head, no, of course I'm healthy. That's why maybe it's not so much his responsibility as every single person's personal responsibility to always protect themselves, no matter how great of a guy they think they're with or how great or how honest, you know, their community might be most of the time.
Well, and I agree
it's
with
just
that.
Too
that,
risky.
That you as the recipient of playtime have to be responsible for yourself. But at the same time, I'm having a hard time giving this guy the benefit of the doubt because he told his superior officers that he was HIV infected, or they found out from, military people have to go through regular physicals and blood tests, so they knew about it. They specifically told him he is required, as a military man, it is an order for him to tell his partners. He specifically told his partners that he was not infected. That's where I say that this guy is, I mean, this is basically, if someone got infected, that's just about manslaughter right there.
And, you know, just as a matter of public health policy, we really, you know, need to make sure that whenever something comes up where there's, you know, a cut in funding for this kind of, you know, health service or anything like that, we really need to make sure that we're on the ball and endorsing either, you know, the current level of funding or better funding on it and not get this stuff cut. You know, somebody getting infected with HIV or AIDS, or, you know, even something with herpes, there's got to be a support system in place to help people out when they get infected with this, whether it's just something basic like documentation or, you know, a quick, you know, visit with a therapist or a psychologist or something to, you know, a whole, you know, support system, a group where people can attend and talk about these things. So that way it never gets to the point where you're, you know, hating yourself and in denial and not thinking that it's going to be a problem or anything like that. It's just in general, you know, we got to be on the ball. A lot of these type of services are under attack. You know, the country is in a deep financial crisis and a lot of people are looking for ways to cut funds. And, you know, hey, if this actually infected a bunch of other people, there would be a larger financial issue to worry about because we'd have to worry about health issues for all that. So
absolutely, we got to support places like Planned Parenthood and all those other great I lost my thought anyways. But I did want to say, Cooper, I did want to say one thing.
Yes.
Is that I agree this guy is a total douchebag, but let's not confuse the fact that HIV is not necessarily a death sentence. We want to make sure that people out there who might actually be inflicted with, you know, HIV or, you know, even AIDS, there's a lot of survivors and there's some magical medicine out there right now. So
oh yeah, I'm just saying we should try him for attempted manslaughter, but it doesn't, no one has to die for that to happen. This guy needs to go away.
Yeah, agreed.
And he is for 8 years in a military prison.
So on to our next question, what is your advice on getting into swinging when you have kids? My wife and I have been thinking about getting into swinging for some time now, but we've been scared to. We've listened to the first 10 podcasts, and you did and cannot wait to hear the rest of them, since you have given us great advice and made us see there are swingers that want to be friends outside of sex. But we had a baby 9 months ago, and we're not sure how swingers feel about kids. I did pick up that some of the swingers you know have kids, since you talked about blocking off their rooms for parties. So, how do you feel about swingers having kids? What effect do you think swinging has on the kids, and what advice can you give us that we have not even thought to ask?
I personally have been to a number of on a number of dates and to a number of parties of people who have kids, and the kids are never exposed to the swinging, the actual swinging. Sometimes the kids will meet the swingers, but they're not. They never see anything that's shocking, appalling, inappropriate, anything like that. And most often when it's something more than just a 2-on-2 date, the kids are out of the house and have nothing to do with any of it anyway.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to look at it again from the perspective of what do all people do when it comes to kids and, you know, potentially exposing them to sexuality. No parent wants to be in a situation where they're having sex in front of their kids. I mean, that stuff never happens on purpose, but you never want to be in that situation. Extending that to the swing community, there's no reason that you should have to worry specifically, you know, when you're playing with other couples about your kids being around. Just take common sense precautions. If I have people over for a date, I want my kids out of there. You know, well, kid out of there. I just don't want to deal with that. You know, it's not something you should have to worry about. As far as, you know, practical things like scheduling around, you know, somebody else's kids or anything like that, I don't think that's a big deal. We all have busy lives. You know, you don't even really need to reveal that you have a child unless it's going to be a very big deal when it comes to scheduling or potentially having to cancel a date for some reason. You know, that's always a possibility. You know, your child's 9 months old, and if something happens with him or her at the babysitter and you have to cancel a date early, okay, you know, that's, I think, something anybody would be able to understand. So, if you want to tell people that you have a kid, I think that's great. I don't think there's any reason that that should be a turnoff. But if anything, I would try very hard to make sure that, you don't have to worry about a screaming kid in the other room during a date, you know?
Because that is a turnoff.
It's a turnoff for everybody, for anybody. Dylan, I think you hit something on the head with the word community. I mean, the one thing that Prof and I have experienced, and I think we've shared a lot of this, all of us, on the podcast, is that our swing friends are a community that we share a lot more. And not everybody swings the same way, but we tend to share a lot more with our swing friends and have connections outside of just going on dates or going to swing parties. And so folks can just be a part of your life. It doesn't have to always be about a date. If that's how you swing, great. But a lot of times swinger friends are in your life more than just for swing purposes. They're around during vanilla parties or, you know, the cookouts or those types of things. Or they might just be folks that are in your greater community that you see here and there. So I think it's important to see it in some ways. For some people, it's a little bit more seamless than just having your swing experiences and your vanilla experiences. So there's kind of an ebb and flow, and agreed that those common sense precautions are, I mean, it's the same as if you are a single parent and you're dating. It's really no different in that sense that you're dating. So you're a couple who's dating if you're a couple. Mm-hmm. And you just take those precautions to, if you bring a date or dates home to your space, you take those common sense precautions and provide the perspective to your children that you feel is developmentally appropriate, just as you would if you were a single parent who was dating.
That's a good comparison. And I've been rolling over the second part of your question, you know, what effect do you think swinging has on kids? I only think that might be an issue you have to deal with once your kid's starting to get older. And when they're not exactly kids anymore, when they're preteens or teenagers, when they start to notice that maybe you have a very close relationship with another couple that seems, you know, a little bit more intimate. And I don't mean like you're kissing them or anything in front of other people. I just mean, you know, the kind of close relationship that you might have with family, except they're not family, or with, like, you know, best friends, except they're not, you know, you may not be billing them as your best friends or anything like that. So as they get older, it may get a little bit harder to hide, or not even necessarily hide, just be swingers and not have to worry about your kids noticing something's just a little bit off. But you know what? There are, you know, while you don't have to send out your 14-year-old for babysitting, you can always have him or her sleep over at another friend's house and, you know, just let them know that your parents, you know, want a night alone. And all you have to do is say, you know what, we'd like a night alone, because when parents say that, that's code for, we're going to do stuff you don't want to know about, so stay the fuck out. That's all you got to say. Yeah.
Do you think it would be wrong to kiss another person in front of your kids?
I don't think it'd be wrong, but I think that if you're going to do stuff like that, you're ending up making a choice to express the kind of lifestyle you're leading in front of your kids and make sure that they know that you think it's okay. And so I guess it goes into education, sexual education, or relationship education.
Sure.
Especially for polyamory, if you want to be that person and you don't want to hide that from your children, then I think that's an okay conversation to have, and then they'll understand that. But again, you know, that's not dumping your sexuality on them. That's you just saying, you know what, I like this other person a lot, and I like to express it by giving him a little kiss.
Sometimes grown-ups like to kiss each other.
Yeah, and then again, they'll tune out and say, no, thank you, getting the hell out of here. So,
well, you know, but what the one interesting thing that being open with your children in any form about non-monogamy is depending on the, well, not even depending on the age of that child. That child can go to school then and say, you know what, my mommy likes to kiss other guys. And suddenly you've got more issues because your child is then outing you, and not even in a specific way. Your child maybe is saying something where the teacher's going to overhear it and assume, okay, well, there's an affair there, and then run into, you know, there's all sorts of little ripple effects that could happen from being open in front of your child.
That's a good point, Cooper. I think that if you're going to drag your kids into the closet with you, I don't think that they should necessarily be exposed. You shouldn't have to force secrecy upon your children. But to your point, Dylan, the polyamory thing, for me, I've never had this discussion with my children. I have a son who's coming around the age of 10 or so, and he's just always known mommy to be the way she is. He's never asked any questions. The closest he's gotten is if he's noticed a partner hasn't been around for a while, he'll say, hey, what happened to that guy? Or where'd that lady go? But for the most part,
I like the idea of him going with that guy.
Well,
what happened
I'm
to that
gonna
guy?
I'm not going to name the names.
No, I know.
But
it painted,
you know,
a picture in my mind.
It totally is. There's just a train of men going.
I didn't think that happened in polyamory as much as it happens in swinging.
Really, mommy, doesn't. What happened to Tyler and Jaden and Tom and Dylan?
No, but my kids, you know, they all meet most of the partners that we deem suitable to be at the house. You know, people who we see being real perspectives for real relationships, and I've just never really thought too much about talking to him about it. We've had a couple of the little anatomy talks, and we've had kind of the where babies come from talks, but he's never really made asked a lot of questions about what it means to have a relationship or anything, you know, about monogamy versus non-monogamy, because everything he sees on television or in nature, it's all very monogamous.
Well, you know, I still like Ginger's point that it's really comparable to a single mother, a single father relationship where you're going to be dating and you end up bringing someone into it. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge deal.
Totally. And my little boy is totally well-adjusted. I'm very interested to see how his sexuality manifests, if he'll be straight or monogamous, or he'll probably be straight, monogamous, and hardcore Christian.
Is that how you rebel in San Francisco?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the way he's going to have to go.
Interesting.
Well, you know, I haven't even taken time to think about if you raise a child with none of the social or moral constraints about being monogamous, what the default would be. If it's the same kind of default where you're kind of born being straight, gay, bi, somewhere in between, or whether it's something where your default is kind of, you know, non-monogamous. I mean, I can look back and I know from the very start I liked several girls at the same time. And it wasn't, you know, I never had to pick and choose. It was the external factors that were telling me that I needed to pick which feelings to address. And so for me, my default was, I like you and you and you, and, you know, that'd be cool. I just don't know how
that... Of course, Sex at Dawn would argue that our default is non-monogamy. The problem is there's no way to raise someone in that vacuum where there isn't this external stimuli saying that monogamy is the way. And if you're not monogamous, you're living an aberrant lifestyle. There is that's everywhere. But to, give your child the information and just let them know there are other forms. It's sort of the same thing you talk about when a child is raised Catholic. If all they know is Catholic, they're probably going to be Catholic, or they're going to swing wildly to the other direction. If you give your child all the information and say, these are the alternatives and this is what's going on, then your child can make that decision between, do I want to be Catholic? Do I want to be Jewish? Do I want to be, any of those other things, including, do I want to not believe in anything at all?
It's all a lot to take in. Oh, but I do have one last tip for our non-monogamous parents, mm-hmm. that just be prepared to be very, very, very jealous sometimes of your non-monogamous friends without children.
We're going to take a quick commercial break to let you listen to some of our awesome sponsors. So we'll be right back with Life on the Swing Set with some more listener voicemail and emails.
Hello, listeners. You know, a lot of sex toys come across our desks here at Life on the Swing Set. Some of them are good, but many are forgettable. Then there are the products from close to you. These toys are musically named because music is the language of passion. They rise to the top, superior instruments of pleasure that you can't wait to play with again and again. Close to You's entire line of toys are the cream of the crop. Their vibrators and anal beads are elegant, soft, and most wonderfully waterproof. Pick up Close to You's Opus G-Spot Vibe today at EdenFantasies.com.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called The Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is at smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality, non-toxic sex toys for people of all genders and sexual orientations. They have educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about smittenkittenonline.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. Can I use it too? They have this super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. SmittenKittenOnline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
Okay, welcome back to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. Tonight we're doing the listener mailbag. We're going to gangbang the mailbag. And yes, that is just a shameless attempt to grab some keyword SEO. And I have no problem with that, really. We got another voicemail here. So, Dylan, if you could cue that up for me.
Hi, everyone. It's Sparky from Vancouver. I got a question for you. I'm a straight guy, but I can imagine in my brain sucking a guy's dick or having sex with another guy. But the thought of kissing, like the intimate part, really gives me the willies. And I'm just curious to know what you think of that. What's the deal with that? So love the show. You're doing a great job, and hope to hear your answer soon. Bye.
I like Canadians.
I know, they're so cute.
I really do. And did you notice both of our callers were Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh wow. So, yeah, no, I did.
International voicemail, and both of them had very, very adorable slight accents. So
wow.
Thank you to our Canadian contingency. And I know this question was predominantly addressed to me because I've said stuff like this, but I want to ask Shira because I know she always gets pissed off at me.
I get so grumpy about this
because of this issue.
It's
interesting, and because to me, and this I've given this some thought lately, is I can kiss a girl, and that's one thing, you know, and it is what it is. And then there's boobs, and then there's pussy, and then there's the girl, and it's awesome. And really, the only interesting thing on the guy is the cock. That's the only thing I can't get elsewhere.
Yes, that's very true. Cocks only exist on men.
It becomes I want to play with that.
Sure, but Ginger, maybe you can back me up here. When you think of women, are you only interested in their vagina because you cannot find those on men, or maybe their boobies?
No.
You can find boobies on men. You just have to look harder.
You can also find cocks on women sometimes. So, I mean, we get all into gender continuum stuff.
This is very true.
Which can be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll have to talk about that on another show. You know, I think that is part of what lies within the word or label bisexual. That there are some people who are bisexual a certain way, and there are others who are bisexual a different way. And, you know, when I think about where I am when it comes to men and women, I am up for kissing and all of the above. But I will say that there are some people, men and women, who I'm less interested in kissing. Does that,
it's the difference between being fully intimate and sexual with someone, maybe?
Exactly. I think that there's a lust passion kind of place. And then there's a more like intimate, playful place. And, you know, for me, it varies from person to person, and it's not tied to male or female. And maybe that's just part of how that particular person is bisexual, that the intimacy, I don't know, it's tricky. Like, I'm talking myself in circles. Somebody stop me.
I know.
So I'm fully cognizant of the whole, you know, sexual binary issue where, you know, men and women, I'm on board. I'm also fully on board with this whole Kinsey scale issue where there are varying levels of, you know, sexuality. Coop might not be, you know, right down in the middle, and that's okay. And our caller might not be either.
I'm the one to the left.
Our caller might not be.
I don't know what numbers
either.
Those are.
However, I'm going to have to go against everything I just said because I am on a avid boy kissing campaign, and I am not going to let this one drop. There needs to be more boy kissing in North America. I'm going to include our Canadian friends.
I have a question. I have a question about your campaign because are you feeling like it's a socialization thing? Like boys don't kiss boys or men don't kiss men because of some sort of socialization, and therefore it's kind of layered on top. So even if they have that desire, they're suppressing it because of socialization or cultural issues.
I'm gonna address that specifically.
Even though I asked Shira,
she'll get there. But I need to hit this. It goes back to women are very soft and smooth and pretty, and that's what they are. So I get women looking at another woman and wanting to kiss her, even if she's not bisexual. And I used air quotes. So picture air quotes around that. Men are scratchy and rough and difficult, and I don't understand why you girls want to kiss men.
See, I don't like this answer. You've said it before, and I've actually been rolling this around in my head for a while, and I'm not saying you're wrong, because that, you know, it's your opinion and stuff.
Well, you can't tell me my opinion is wrong.
That's what I know. I'm admitting that. But I have a question that may actually shortcut this discussion here. Cooper, got a question for you.
Okay.
When you're sucking a guy's cock, do you, or jerking him off, or, you know, when you've got your hands around his balls and you're sucking his cock, do you look into the eyes of the guy that you're doing it to?
No, I pretty much focus on what I'm doing.
And would, do you have any desire to look into the eyes of a guy that you're doing that to?
Not really.
Now, when you're with a woman and you're going down on her or servicing her in any way that doesn't involve being at her face, do you ever look up into her eyes?
Yes, because they're pretty.
No, but see, a guy's eyes can be pretty too,
and a guy can be soft. And
you guys can all go there. That's cool.
No, what I'm saying is, I think that there's just an innate thing that either clicks or doesn't click. I'm going to admit something to you guys. This has been, I think that I've actually outwardly been struggling with this for the last few podcasts. Whenever we've talked about buy stuff, because I've...
Whenever you're putting things in your butt.
Yeah.
which people loved, by the way.
Oh, really? Yeah, I definitely struggled with that a little bit.
We've had a lot of comments on that. They want more things in Dylan's ass on this show.
Oh, all right.
This could be a whole segment.
What's in Dylan's ass tonight?
I can arrange that. And you know what? I just got this exercise ball to use as a chair while I was... The nice thing about using this as your primary office chair is that you get to do all sorts of stuff in the middle that you wouldn't normally do, because you might just sit down for an hour, but now I can, like, roll around and get on my back and do weird things. And the other day, I was rolling back, and I'm like, you know what? I could put, like, a butt plug or even a dildo on the ground and just kind of roll onto it. And it solves it solves one of the problems that I was having getting something into my butt, where it's like, you know, it's kind of awkward putting something in your own butt unless it's like mounted to something, right? Well, I could just put something on the ground and angle it and then just slowly slide and roll forward on the ball and then slowly still get in there. And it seems
I think you're overthinking this.
Oh my God. You've lost track of the question.
All right.
And you were in the middle of suggesting something too.
All right. The middle, okay, back to what I was mentioning. I was going to share something, okay? Because yeah. I've been okay. struggling with this, I've been going over a lot in my head. I was just at a wedding. And I kissed a guy. Okay. Now,
yay.
I kissed a guy not because I wanted to kiss him. Okay. Aww. But well,
so you're concerned about intent too, Shira. You're not just concerned about the desire to kiss. You want the guys to want to kiss each other. You don't just want to see them kiss each other.
I have a problem. Okay, I have a problem.
You know, men don't care if the girls want to kiss each other. We're just happy to see it.
So there's a camera involved.
I need the secret angst. Continue. Right. Please continue.
So there's a camera involved, and we were all just taking a picture.
There's documentation of
there
this?
There is actually a documented picture of me kissing a guy.
My.
So what was happening was, we were all kind of together, and his girlfriend's dress was, low cut to the point where she was just barely peeking out, and we noticed it. And so I was getting all flirty with her, and this is a couple that we've been, you know, really friendly with for a while, but they're not, you know, swingers or anything, just monogamous. I commented on it, and we were, you know, kind of got up close and took a picture. And so she said, oh, you and Evan should take a picture together, and then you two should kiss. And I'm like, oh, sure. And so we kissed in front of the camera, and then I got to kiss her, and it was really nice. But that led me down thinking, you know what? I didn't want to kiss him because I wanted to kiss him. I was doing that just for the attention, but I started thinking about what I would feel like kissing guys again and why it hasn't worked for me before. And I started thinking, well, wait a second, though. You know, would it really be that bad to suck a guy's cock or play with a guy or anything? It's like, you know what? I might be getting more on board with Cooper on this. I haven't tried it. I'm not sure if I'm going to try it anytime in the near future. But I really don't see it. It's just another part of somebody's body. It's just another part of sexuality. And I don't see why I should not. A person and a personality seems focused in the face for me. And if it's a guy's personality that I don't think I'm comfortable getting intimate with, well then, okay, then I don't have to get up in his face and kiss a guy. But why would that stop me from enhancing pleasure all around by doing something else? I don't know, and I don't know the answer to that yet.
That's a very fun way to look at it. I'm still on your team.
Well, good. I do think we should tell our caller that despite the overwhelming enthusiasm for him to want to kiss guys, we should applaud him for being on the camp where he'd be okay moving into whatever element of the bisexual spectrum, because that shows an openness that most guys don't have.
Yeah, that's a big step. And just having the confidence to ask the question, even if it is monogamous on some place on the inner tubes, is pretty cool. So pop stands for answering the question.
I honestly do. Like, I tease a lot about boy kissing, but I think that all of the amazing moves that a lot of formerly straight guys have been making into just playing is, you know, I think that's so progressive and wonderful. It makes me very happy, too.
And I also don't out of hand reject the idea that I might want to kiss a guy. I have not been in a situation where that has been a desire.
Will you sing the Katy Perry song, adjusted for the appropriate content?
If it happens, sure.
Yes!
I will call you as soon as the evening has ended, and I will sing specifically to you
that song. Oh, thank you. You've made my day.
You know, Cooper, I've actually pictured you when I was thinking about what it would be like kissing a guy. And I gotta say, out of all the guys in the world I might want to kiss, you're pretty low on the list.
Hey, right back at you there, guy.
You guys. I would.
There would have to be a lot of encouragement elsewhere for me to want to kiss Cooper. And it's not that he's a good-looking guy. I just, not my kind of pretty.
See, all of that wonderful progress you made, only to go straight back. But not for you, Cooper. Hey,
you know, and as the one who should be offended, doesn't bother me.
I know.
Let's move it on.
All right. So we got another piece of mail here. It says, I would like for the wife and I to experience swinging. She is reluctant. She has not said no. What she has said is that she didn't want to make God mad. I've not found anything in the Bible against a married couple having sex with another married couple. I know it is wrong to go behind your spouse's back, and I would not do that. I explain we are not cheating on each other, as we are in the same room watching each other. How would you answer my wife?
As as a podcast that has two ex-Catholics on,
I would just lead with there is no God.
I'm gonna walk with a little softer stick there for a second and say
a little more magnanimous.
Just a little bit. I would lead with, well, where does she draw the line on things that may potentially anger God? For example, you're supposed to have sex for procreation only, right? There's no...
The Pope just reinforced that, in fact.
right. Yeah, and, you know, there was a... So you're only supposed to have sex for the purposes of procreation. Anything else is lust, and lust is a sin. And you shouldn't be doing it because that would be a sin and lustful and bad and all that stuff. So if you're going to interpret... First of all, where do you start believing things? Okay, do you start believing them because a priest or the Pope says them? Do you start believing things because you've read the Bible and you take this as your interpretation? Do you start believing things because you have read the words of the Bible and there is one section somewhere in the Bible, whether it's popular or not so popular or in the beginning or the end or whatever, that says you shouldn't be doing this in one place? Because as we all know, people that believe in the Bible as literally God's word. Every single word in the Bible is, you know, was meant to be there by God, and it means exactly what it means, and you should obey that. That's problematic because there's not just a little bit of doublespeak everywhere, but there are lots of sections that directly contradict each other, and there are lots of things that are said in the Bible specifically about how men are supposed to treat women and how women are supposed to defer to men. It's not just that we don't practice them, it's that we outright fight against them and legislate against them and all sorts of stuff. So find where she...
Including multiple wives, sex with children, all those things. Those are actually in the Bible.
Yeah, or
if you want to go that way, you know,
or slavery, or talking in church, or, you know, your place of worship, things like that. So
magic trees, talking snakes, all that stuff.
So where does she draw the line? If she takes the counsel of a priest, it's going to be problematic because when you take the totality of faith and the Bible and the teachings, it's pretty clear that you're not supposed to be with anyone else except for your wife. And while they don't say much anymore, it's you're only supposed to have sex with your wife for procreation, they don't highlight that part. They're pretty certain about the whole one partner thing, monogamy, one man, one woman, all that stuff. So that's going to take some actual work at convincing. If you're approaching it, or if your wife approaches her faith and religion from the perspective of, I've read most of the Bible, or I've taken in a lot of things regarding faith, and I have a good understanding of it, I think it's going to be easier, not just because the Bible doesn't say anything specific about a married couple fooling around with another married couple. You would have to make that. I think you would have to make that leap, and by saying, "Well, you know, it isn't explicitly said in the Bible," and there's, you know, there's all sorts of things about adultery, but what is adultery? How do you define adultery? And go from there. Whereas if your wife takes the Bible literally, that, you know, obviously you can say, "Well, hey, it doesn't say that, and this isn't how adultery is defined." You might actually be okay, although if she believes in the Bible literally, you're probably going to have a lot of other problems.
You've got a whole host of other problems.
Right.
At that
so,
point.
I think if she's reasonable, you can get there.
I think I have to back it up from the question and just say, generally speaking, and you know, just taking the God piece of the puzzle out of it for a minute, even though that's the question. I'm like going to shift it just a little bit, but it'll still apply. Is that ultimately, I'm of the opinion when it comes to non-monogamy that there should not be any kind of
coercion,
or I was going to use a word less of a word with less of a connotation around
something as simple as convincing. I think you're hitting,
that's the word I'm looking for. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the sticking point for you is the "she is reluctant" sentence,
yeah,
right?
So I'll just back it up before we even talk about God or the Bible or whatever her reasoning is, or his reasoning, depending on who's doing the convincing, is that no one should be convincing their partner to swing or to be non-monogamous in any way. That both parties, or all parties, depending on what your partnership looks like, need to come to that conclusion themselves. And that doesn't mean that you're not talking to one another. I mean, you're certainly talking to one another, and you can certainly talk to your partner on where their mind is, whether that's God in the Bible or feeling like they want to keep sex special just between the two of you, or whatever their particular hesitance is. That's not to say that you don't talk to them about their hesitance and really discern their hesitance and really ask a lot of questions, but it should be from a purely curious and interested standpoint, not from a standpoint of, I'm going to listen to this so then I can counter with my argument so that they'll land in my camp of wanting to swing or wanting to be
right.
Non-monogamous. And so I think it's just important that people don't try to push an agenda with their partners ever. Whatever it is that they're trying to talk their way around.
Boy kissing.
or whatever it is, I really think it's important that you, first and foremost, you're there for your partner. And you're listening to your partner, and you let that run its course to the point of them coming to their own conclusion. And if that means that their conclusion is to remain monogamous, then so be it.
It's very possible that the phrase, "I did not want to make God mad," is a very convenient way to say, I don't think we're ready for this.
Right, Cooper. And that's kind of why I wanted to back it up without questioning this particular listener or reader's email, is that I don't want to call that into question, but it is true that oftentimes if the communication is just getting started, one partner may just give a very, I don't want to say superficial reason. It might be a serious reason, but it might just be the tip of the iceberg reason. Mm-hmm. And so they start there, but there are all these other reasons under. And so it's not to say that you might not land in the non-monogamous world someday. It's just, it really needs to start with honoring your partner first and foremost, whatever that means.
And I'm going to do something surprising now, and I'm going to defend religious swingers.
Because I do know several religious swingers who, after a date on Saturday night, will be up for church Sunday morning. And where they always come down on is, yes, you do have to sort of pick and choose what you believe in order for this to work, which I know I have a problem with, but at the same time, they are of the belief that their God wants them to be happy in their marriage, and their marriage is made better by swinging. And should that swinging not be there, should they not have these outlets to be non-monogamous and explore beyond the boundaries of their marriage, they might either be cheating, which is definitely a sin, or get divorced, which also the church is not quite fond of. So,
I think it's,
there's that.
I think it's interesting that I approached answering this question from the perspective of, here's how you can continue talking to your wife about it, and maybe, you know, push the conversation further. And you guys approached it from, you know, does she really want to do this? I may have to check myself just to make sure I don't get caught in a trap later, because I'm like, oh shit.
In fairness, I approached it from there is no God.
True. It was the first impression I got, was maybe she was just kind of giving it some big, scary answer to just end the conversation. But,
and there is a difference between reluctance and the coy, I don't know if I want to do this. So you have to know that about your own partner. If their reluctance actually seems like, let's stop talking about this because I'm really not interested, then you need to let it go. And maybe bring it up another time, a year from now, 2 years from now.
It is always okay to ask again.
And you have to be okay with them always and then saying no.
Precisely.
Agreed. Well, hopefully all that round and round helps out that particular listener.
Well, we certainly pounded that from all directions.
We certainly did.
Really, however they feel about things, there should be an answer somewhere in there for them.
Plus, I'm sure there's a joke in there about pounding something from every direction, but I'm just not coming up with it.
Banging our mailbag.
Well, yeah, I hesitated to reuse the title of the show.
Why? Okay. It's perfect.
Well, let's get back to the gangbang. So, Ginger, you got one.
Yes, I do. I do. It reads, "We're novices with children and a business, and I'm concerned about privacy. What is the etiquette regarding names, etc.? I can't imagine introducing myself as anyone other than myself, but I'm nervous too."
Well, here's an interesting thing, because there definitely is the possibility that if you were, let's say, outed in your community, there is the possibility that that outing could hurt your business, hurt your personal life. It could do all these bad things to your life. But at the same time, you know, there have been very, very few notable cases where someone was outed and there was a big to-do about it. In fact, the couple who went on Oprah a few years back to specifically talk about swinging without having their face blurred, without having any questions of their identity, reported afterwards that it did nothing. No one was upset. No one thought less of them. It was just another thing in their lives. They didn't lose their jobs. So you do have to look at it as how I can be safe for my comfort level, because that's very important. And for that comfort level, a lot of people only use their first names or they use pseudonyms. And when you talk about couples, generally speaking, and I find this fascinating because it's so difficult to do, the swinger community uses only first letters of names.
Yeah.
And I really can't handle a whole lot of conversations with only first letters, because I get distracted and lost, and it's just like, just tell me their names. I'm not going to do anything bad.
All you gotta do is spell out the letter. For example, D would be D-E-E, and then all of a sudden you're talking to a D.
It's a lot. True. There's probably a lot of J's and M's out there. I bet J and M are a very popular couple.
But I mean, the bottom line is, nobody is going to fault you for not wanting to give out your last name. If you seem excessively cagey about any information about yourself, though, you may have a problem getting people to trust you in order to
have a swing relationship with you. I know if people aren't willing to give me information that I'm more than willing to give them, maybe I don't talk to them as much, because I know that I have this give and take. And if I'm going to be giving information, I sort of expect the same type of information coming back from me. But that's just me.
Well, I think, Cooper, you said, you made a point, like, you need to do it in a way that you feel comfortable.
Exactly.
Whatever that means, whether you do choose a nickname for just one of the partners, or you choose two nicknames, or you just use first names. And I just think that, and this might take us off in a different direction, but there's something to be said, and, you know, I always joke about it as the swinger code, and maybe it's just the non-monogamous code or whatever it is, but in terms of not sharing any information about people that you meet in that light in the vanilla world. So if you meet somebody at a swinger party, you don't say when you're somewhere else at the grocery store and they say, oh, do you know so-and-so, and you happen to know them from a swinger party, you don't mention, oh yeah, we met them at a swinger party. I mean, first of all, you know, you're sharing, if you're not out, you're obviously going to be outing yourself, and you're outing someone else. It's just not the common sense in the community. And so I think that if, you know, these folks mentioned they're novices, so they're not privy to maybe those experiences yet. But when you are traveling in those circles and you're at parties and you're meeting people, it's very common to just introduce yourself by your first name. And the reality is, oftentimes you don't really know if it's a nickname right then. You're just having a conversation. And as you get to know people better, the trust level grows. And also, too, if you're within a certain specific region or community, you tend to see the same people at parties. And so you know them, your trust level just grows because you're kind of rubbing shoulders in the same place, and you kind of hold each other's trust in that way. And so I must admit that it's been 5 years for us now, and it's very rare that I've ever thought to myself, wow, I feel uncomfortable, or I don't really trust this person. I've always felt very comfortable. I've felt very in my element. I've felt very cared for among even swinger friends who are just acquaintance swinger friends that we happen to see at parties. I have an affinity for them because we are part of this community. And so, I don't know, I just, it's a hard thing to let go of. And certainly when it comes to families and when it comes to businesses, do what feels right for you. Mm-hmm. And then just move in that direction. Do what feels right and just trust that you're doing the right thing for yourself.
And also realize there isn't a big swinger conspiracy where as soon as you walk in the door, you will be branded swingers and then presented to the world. And by the way, Ginger, your fifth anniversary as swingers, you know what the present for a fifth anniversary is, right?
No.
Wood.
How perfect.
So happy fifth anniversary there.
Me, thank you.
So I have another question to read. Here we go. Is it true that clubs have more of the Ken and Barbie type of swingers, and house parties have a diverse blend of swingers who may not be perfect in some people's eyes?
No.
No.
There is no rhyme or reason why you're going to have different body types at any swing event. You will meet all levels of body types, all levels of personality types. You'll meet awesome people. You will meet assholes. You'll meet beautiful people, you'll meet less beautiful people, you'll meet skinny people, you'll meet fat people, and that is true across the board of house parties and clubs. And if you get to a club that doesn't allow in less desirable, less attractive people, maybe you don't want to frequent that club because those people are assholes.
I will have to say, I have had a little bit of experience at clubs, not necessarily swinger clubs, but dungeons and sex clubs in general. And I'll say one of the most liberating experiences for me personally, who's not a perfect Paris Hilton type bodied woman.
You put Paris Hilton as your perfect
all
body?
Tall and skinny and the tiny little perky boobs. Like
who has ever?
Well, okay, this is what the TV tells me to want. All right,
no,
me,
oh, okay, my. Agreed, Kira. I hear you. I hear
Thank
you.
Thank you.
I hear you.
Really, the TV has made the change to tiny little perky boobs from enormous cleavage bearing boobs.
Yes.
When did this happen?
Have you ever gone bra shopping with your wife?
Listen, that's a problem. I don't think the culture or the media has shifted toward small little perky boobs.
No.
I can
and
tell you,
you
not, but
not
you know
that there
I
is
can
anything
tell you
wrong.
With confidence that men in general will always appreciate almost all boobs everywhere.
Okay,
I just want to put that out there. Yeah,
side note. Bras for large-chested women, not nearly as cute as bras for tiny, perky-boobed women.
That's
anyways,
actually good. Yeah.
My point was, the most liberating body image moment I've ever had in my entire life is when I was at a place called the San Francisco Citadel. This is a BDSM dungeon, and about 4 or 5 times a year, they have an all-female event. And I went in not knowing quite what to expect. I went by myself. I kind of thought I'd go watch for a while, figure out what was going on. And you go in, you go into the dungeon, and you go downstairs, and all around you there's just so much overwhelming stuff. There's people doing needle play over there, and someone's fisting over there, and there's gangbang over there, and it's just all these women. But after a little while, I noticed I went in with all these expectations of what these people would look like, and I could not believe the difference in every kind of woman there. All these beautiful, naked women of every color, of every size. You know, you would assume that the doms in the place would be a lot more imposing, big women. No, I'm seeing tiny little sprites of women dominating giant, you know, big, imposing 300-pound women. Just like the most amazing thing. And like, I've never felt more comfortable just being who I am in my life because the people there were just so diverse. And really, it's beyond the Ken and Barbie thing. You might feel more comfortable than you have in your entire life.
I was going to agree with that 100%. Like,
yeah.
That is one of the things. I mean, when it comes to going to a sex positive venue, that I can speak to that, Shira, that I feel more myself there and more in my skin there than probably anywhere else ever. I mean, I'm, you know, move about the world and feel really great about myself for the most part. But when it comes to being in a sex positive venue, whether it's a swinger venue or a BDSM venue or a, you know, sexcation or something, it's just, it's in the air that people feel great about their bodies, and it really doesn't matter what their bodies look like, and you're ultimately you feel like you're the one who's being judgmental. Like, you're, at least I do. I go to that place where I'm like, I'm embracing of all the bodies, but at the same time you live in the greater culture where you're like, gosh, I can't believe I would even see this person and think how not sexy they might seem when in fact they're wildly sexy when you just are able to be in that sex positive place.
Yeah. And one of the things that I would suggest to the listeners who wrote that question is there's a really cool documentary that I watched within the last 3 months or something. And it was called Naked Las Vegas. It was a documentary about a gentleman photographer who went to Las Vegas to just photograph the people of Las Vegas. They got everything from an Elvis to a showgirl to tourists walking down the street. And you were able to see them be kind of side by side, and there's a book that goes with this, side by side, that clothed and unclothed, and you would be amazed, like, what you assume people look like under their clothes and whatever fantastical, you know, attributes you seem to be making for them in your mind. People are just people. Everyone is normal. The porn, what porn and television has you believing that you should look like, that doesn't really exist. And those are my doorbells. So that's my moment for there.
Well, and I'll just speak as someone who just came back from Desire. There is such variety there that, you know, we got to Desire and I was concerned about wandering around a resort naked because you automatically project this idea of what everybody's going to look like in your head. And in your head, everybody looks better than you. But that's not the case. There are things that make you sexy and attractive and interesting. And there are things that make everybody else sexy and attractive and interesting. And it's different for every person. So you do have to own your level of attractiveness. You have to own that and be comfortable. And comfortable is probably the most attractive.
Yes, comfortable and confident.
Comfortable and confident is very sexy, but I kind of like a person with a little spook in them, personally. Just me. I kind of find the nervous boys a little sexy, so. And girls.
So, if you know, that's good to know if you want to go after Shira. Okay, last question for the night here is a little bit convoluted, and they sort of jump around the actual thing that happened, but I think I have the gist of it here. We are a couple who thought that our communication skills were top drawer. We had some drama the day before a big planned club night that caused us to miss the event. We both got freaked out about a particular set of circumstances that isn't on the horizon yet, if ever. Of course, the idea being that if we discuss every possible scenario, when the time comes, we'll be ready to handle it and have procedures in place. The reality is that neither of us is ready to tackle this particular issue. I think that it's fair to say that perhaps we're over-communicating. And is drama unavoidable? Do even the long-term swingers that have set rules, or not, run into these problems?
Yes.
And there is such a thing as over-communication.
I think that people, as individuals, do this a lot, where they overthink a problem, or they over-plan for something. You know, whether you're planning a project in a business, or, you know, just, you know, your plans for a day, sometimes over-planning and overthinking things is a real problem. You know, if you're looking at a night ahead of you and thinking about how things are going to go and what if this happens and what if that happens, I think you're overthinking it. I think what you need to do is look at the things that you need to know. For example, well, we're going to, you know, any couples that we're going to be with, we do need to talk to about certain things. You know, that goes with the general swinger rules that we've talked about oh so much. You got to be comfortable with your own set of boundaries when it comes to that stuff. But other than that, you kind of just have to take it as it goes. I mean, if you find people you click with, then okay, great. And if you don't find people you click with, well, then okay, great. You have a good time by yourselves. And so taking the time to, you know, like the night before a club and discussing what is actually going to happen there, I think trying to plan for every eventuality is not going to serve you guys well. And you'll end up in a place where you just don't want to talk to each other because you're frustrated or angry or don't like the solutions that you come up with or something, when, you know, it's likely that something like that won't come up if you're really worried about it. Now, having said that, if you have something specific you want to mention, that also might help us answer the question.
I feel like we should do the Dan Savage thing and call them and get, you know, clarification. But I don't have a phone number, so, you know, we can't do that.
What I can say is that in my experience, this happens a lot with polyamorous relationships, where you get so far into what is that word? Negotiating what your relationship can be, that you never get to actually have a relationship. And it's very silly to kind of overthink things. At some point, you kind of have to seize the day. And
it is funny how hypotheticals can often be more damaging than should the circumstance come up naturally.
This is incredibly true.
Because you often have no idea how you're going to react to a situation until you're actually in that situation. You know, and I can say, no, I'm cool with that, totally. But then when it happens, I might not be cool with that.
Right.
So you're this preparation, while communication is good, don't assume that, well, you said you'd be cool with that. That doesn't work because you don't know.
And because that's how they're feeling right then. I think the question of, is drama unavoidable? I mean, I might be the only person who says this, but I think drama is avoidable because just chill. Relax. Leave the party. This is your partner. You know, Prof and I say no consolation prizes. Like, whatever. It's just a swing party. It's just meeting a date. Say your goodnight, say goodbye, and just talk. It doesn't have to escalate. And that's where I think when it is the difference between communicating and negotiating and drama. Drama is when the emotion gets so out of control because there's urgency behind it. We have to act on this. We have to do this. We're going to miss this opportunity, or these people are going to think we're flakes, or you name it. And it's like, for me, when it comes to all of that, that's how I conceive of drama. And I do think that you can choose as partners to not go to that place, to never take it to that realm where you're so keyed up about missing some sort of opportunity or making a date go perfectly or not wanting to miss a particular event that you do turn it into drama. Whereas you should just take a break, have a nice relaxing dinner together, talk about the fun aspects, move through some of the other pieces of the puzzle. I do agree that planning for every eventuality is not going to get you answers. But just take that urgency out of it and go to the place where you're just talking to one another, and there's always another opportunity. If there's anything that I've learned, there's always another opportunity, and it's so much more worth it to focus on your own relationship and to focus on your own partner and help them feel honored and listened to and heard. And there's always another party.
What a fantastic place to stop. Great button, Ginger. So this has been our first mailbag gangbang. I can't even say it with a straight face.
There's a reason for that, Cooper.
And I think it went really well, and we'd love to do these regularly if we get enough response to it and if enough people send in questions. We'd love to have voicemails, so if you want to give us a call, the number is 573-55-SWING. It's 573-557-9464, and it will always go directly to voicemail, so you can feel comfortable that you can leave up to 2 minutes of anything you want, and you might have to call back if you go beyond 2 minutes. You can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. You can ask us questions on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset, or even on Twitter at swingsetlife. So there's all sorts of ways to reach us all, and we're more than happy to help with any questions you have.
Hey, Cooper.
And yes.
Boxers or briefs?
Boxers.
Oh.
Jackass.
This is going to start a whole new discussion.
So close to making it through an out. You know, I was so happy last episode when you had something in your ass because you were so focused on that fucking thing that I was able to get through an entire outro without you going somewhere else. So,
I think the Cooper rage at the end of the show is my favorite part.
Oh, well, we made Shira happy at least, so that's excellent. I'm just going to go ahead and say I've been Cooper Beckett. Thank you to Dylan, Ginger, Shira, and thank you all for swinging by. And see, I get out before you can do it again.
I love that Shira Cooper rage.
It's true. It's the best.
Do you enjoy Life on the Swing Set? Well, hey, why don't you come on over to iTunes and write us a little review? It doesn't have to be long. It makes all the difference in getting us seen by more people. And by seen, I mean heard, because we're a podcast. So if you come on over and give us a good review, we'll be very, very happy you did. And when we get happy, we tend to get naughty. So rate Life on the Swing Set today.